Get ready for Google's new phone, Amazon's tricky algorithm, where's the Ralph Nader of autonomous vehicles, and we open Leo's new ceramic Apple Watch. Do we scratch it? Find out. All that and more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1602, recorded Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at QuickenLoans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about everything you need to know about technology today. We are the apples and oranges of tech news.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about some apples later.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like them apples?
I like them.
Yeah, I know. You're a big fan of them apples. I'm Jason Howell. I'm a big fan of apples, kind of. I mean, you know, Macs and stuff. Oh, I use those.
Not like the Granny Smith or the, you know.
Actually, I'm a big Fuji.
Macintosh.
Fuji. Apple. Apple Crisp is really good. Collection of apples all mushed together with a nice crispy top. Anyways, let's talk about technology, not food, because I'm realizing I'm very hungry. The event we all knew was coming was finally announced by Google for Tuesday, October 4th at 9 a.m. Pacific. Google is taking a very different approach this time around by blasting, basically they're blasting teasers all over the place. It's got its site, google.com/10-4, that's spelled out T-E-N-F-O-U-R. There are ad spots. There was one played last night on the Big Bang Theory that one of our fans tweeted out to us. Billboards in Times Square. These are all kind of touting this date of October 4th. You don't really know exactly what it's in reference to. You just see this like search box slowly morph into the shape of a phone. I just feel like it's kind of strange to be making this so public facing, considering it's a product announcement. Like, you don't see any companies really like pulling out Times Square ads to announce an announcement.
Do you? I don't know. I mean, that's interesting. Especially, well, I think this is a big one, right? I mean, these are the phones made by Google.
Yeah.
They look nice. Mm-hmm. They look like iPhones.
Well, yeah. So you're talking about the leaks, right? We've seen some leaks.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, those are the leaks that we've seen. They've only shown us that shape.
They've seen, yes. The shape is all we're seeing here. So if you like that shape, if you're a fan of that shape of phone, then you are going to love the shape of this phone.
I've been hoping for a round smartphone, but,
So here you have the kind of like less blurry, although there are lots of parts of it blurred out because, you know, whoever leaked this to Android police didn't want to basically find themselves out of a job, I'm guessing. But so these are the phones that are expected, and we talked about it on the show in the past. Pixel is the branding that's expected, not Nexus. So maybe this promotion of this date is less about promoting the announcement, more about promoting the devices, or beyond that, the brand, as someone on Twitter kind of pointed out to me. Like, maybe what they're doing is they're teasing the fact that this, you know, made by Google, which is their tagline for this, is kind of signaling a new step for Google in, you know, like really going to town with the whole marketing approach with their brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, have we seen a leak that shows us whether there's a headphone jack in it or not?
Pretty positive there is a headphone jack in it.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
I think they are perfectly positioned because yesterday we were talking about how, you know, the Galaxy Note 7 was, you know, is, as we know, recalled, and maybe mm-hmm. the average consumer doesn't know the difference between that and the Galaxy S7, and that brand is kind of tarnished. And then it's getting it's a little bit hard for people to get the iPhone 7, and the reviews that are coming out are just like, eh, you know, it's fine. Like, no one's saying, like, I love it so much. And so I think that this is perfect. And you know, I mean, my original date for the iPhone 7 was October 4th, and I think it's coming a little bit earlier. But, you know, I wonder if there are also, like, here's when we're, you know, they did what Samsung should have done. You know, Samsung rushed the production of the Galaxy 7 to get out before the iPhone, but maybe, you know, Google is doing the right thing, where, like, let's have our phone released right after the iPhone 7 when everyone's just, you know, when it's A, ready, B, probably not going to blow up.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, I don't think I need the iPhone 7. Like, it's not that great. And, you know, the camera isn't that wonderful. And, you know, it's hard to get anyway. So maybe I'll try, you know, these new Google phones.
Yeah, maybe they can capitalize on that. The Pixel phones aren't the only thing that should be announced. Google Home, which is the home assistant, basically running Google Assistant underneath. That's expected to be shown off, possibly a tablet made by Huawei. You know, and I don't know if that would fall into the Pixel category as well. Daydream VR hardware, which Daydream is kind of built into Nougat as a kind of a VR platform inside Android natively. But there is, you know, the possibility of showing off kind of that hardware spec, maybe having a hardware partner to kind of reveal at the event, something along those lines. I do think that it's a little disingenuous for them to say made by Google, because these phones are not made by Google.
Not making them down in the Googleplex?
No. All accounts say that HTC manufactured these phones, that these are from HTC in partnership with HTC and Google. The same way that Google has done all of their Nexus devices. They work with a manufacturing partner to create a phone that they can kind of put their own branding on. So, but yet this tagline really makes it seem like, yo, yeah, we made this thing. Like, and I don't know how much people are going to buy into that, but maybe I'm reading too much into that tagline. But I feel like it promises one thing that it's not going to deliver.
Branded by Google.
Yes, exactly.
But I wonder if it'll have some sort of integration to Google Home and Daydream that other phones don't.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, well, yeah, Daydream as a spec requires certain things out of the phone. So I'd be really surprised if at least one of these phones didn't come out. I mean, one of these phones is going to be Daydream compatible. And I don't know if both of them are or not, because one is supposed to be smaller than the other. And maybe that'll influence it a little bit. But I know that the larger one is going to be. Otherwise, wow, they really failed on that effort, because they need to. That's part of this, is kind of proving, you know, the reason that they develop a lot of these things with Android. Mm-hmm. Here's model hardware to show it off on.
Mm-hmm. Well, the government transparency group, the Sunlight Foundation, is shutting itself down and looking to combine assets with another group, according to a rather wordy post on its website today. The Sunlight Foundation created OpenGov, which allows anyone to easily search for congressional bills and find out who supports them. They're also behind PolitWhoops, the tool we've talked about on this show before, that lets you see tweets that people in politics have deleted. Now, it's unclear from the post, from the Sunlight Foundation, what exactly will happen next. But I think, I mean, you know, this wasn't a widely reported story, but I thought it was interesting. I definitely feel like PolitWhoops was one of the most interesting things that they did to me. Like, they did OpenGov, too, which let people look at bills and, you know, search who was behind that. But PolitWhoops was, they took the information from Twitter, and then if anyone in politics deleted a tweet, then you could see that, which it was a lot. Like, if you go there, it's a lot of people with, you know, who've just had a typo and redone it. But I mean,
it's not as salacious as it may sound right off the top.
But I mean, I heard an interview recently with one of the people who worked on PolitWhoops, and, you know, said there's some really interesting things that you could find there. You know, Bo Bergdahl, who was the soldier who was, you know, who came back, who was traded for the people in Guantanamo Bay, and was, you know, came back and was, there was a whole episode of Serial, a whole season of Serial about this, but he came back, and a lot of politicians were like, oh, great, like, you know, we got our soldier back. And then when the story became more mysterious, when they didn't know if he was a deserter, like, all these people deleted their tweets, you know. So I think there's a value in seeing what a politician deletes, and there's a value in what the Sunlight Foundation was doing, and maybe they're going away. They sort of say, well, you know, technology is changing so fast, and, you know, maybe we're not needed anymore. But I do think transparency in the government is definitely still needed.
Yeah, it fills a really important role, you know, especially when you're talking about politicians who live their life in the spotlight. And you know, should have the words and their actions and stuff kind of, you know, be held accountable to that. And social media just, you know, following on the Politwoops. I don't know.
Politwoops.
Yeah. You know, down that road. I mean, that's just another way for them to get their message out there. So having some sort of accountability to follow that is pretty important. It sounds like they had around 24 candidates that were considered. But the board just could not decide on any of them in order to kind of take over this role. And I'm not sure what that says. I mean, maybe their standards are too high, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the greater purpose of the Sunlight Foundation would benefit from sticking around and having someone in this role. Maybe I don't know how you could go through that many candidates and still not all agree on somebody, or just kind of keep the search going. But I guess probably comes down to money.
Yeah, I mean, it does come down to money, because I think what they did was see where the money was coming from to different political campaigns. And then the Citizens United decision that just happened gave personhood to corporations. So now corporations are able to give money to political groups, and then it makes it more confusing than, you know, coming from certain people. So
yeah. Are you getting the best deal when you shop on Amazon? ProPublica conducted an examination that found that Amazon's algorithm often steers users away from lower cost, identical items and towards its own items, which cost more. And then, of course, if shipping is added, much more than the alternatives if you don't have Prime. After looking at 250 popular shopping items over the course of many weeks, ProPublica found that at least 3/4 of the time, Amazon placed its own more expensive offering of a product ahead of identical and considerably less expensive offers from other sellers in the Amazon marketplace. And when I was reading this, I was kind of like, well, it's Amazon's market, so they can do that, right? Like, there's nothing... Is there a reason that they shouldn't be able to offer their own stuff? I mean, unless they've made a specific, you know, pledge to users that they would not do that.
Well, I think the argument that ProPublica made was that they're misrepresenting what, you know, they say, here's the price plus shipping. Mm-hmm. And so when you go through, all the way through, then you see that, you know, an Amazon product might actually cost more.
Yeah, like 2 times as much.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they're putting that Amazon product up high, because what Amazon responded to this ProPublica story and said, you know, 9 out of 10 of our products are free shipping, because so many people use Prime, and so many people buy more than $49 worth of stuff. And so that's the way the algorithm is set up. It's set up that to assume that the Amazon products are not going to, you're not going to have shipping, and they're going to be the cheapest one. So it's just those poor people who don't have Prime, and they don't have, you know, but they even said, like, Prime isn't a subscription service, because you can get it once a month. You can just pay for it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, surely Amazon doesn't need to tell us what the cheapest price on something is. But I think if they're representing it as, you know, this price plus shipping and making a list, I think it's implied that they're looking out for the customer, and I don't think they are. And this is another case of blaming the algorithm, you know? Yeah. Well, you know, this mysterious algorithm, like, don't, you know, anyone who says math isn't important, math is important. It is making all of these decisions. Mm-hmm. This is math, and it's mysterious math. They're not telling us exactly how it works.
Yeah, you don't really know how it happens underneath. And I should actually mention that as I was kind of reading through this, in the past, Bezos has kind of answered to shareholders with a commitment of featuring the lowest priced items on the page, you know, also considering things like, you know, how much they have in stock and whether they can deliver it. So I guess this goes counter to that in that regard. But, you know, it's kind of like the argument that comes along with Google and searches, and, you know, promoting it, Google's own products in search results. And in my head, I'm like, well, yeah, but it's like, it's Google's thing. Like, that's okay, right? It's okay. But you're right. I mean, if you're promoting an item that then, once you go through the process, that item at the end of the process versus the beginning is a completely different price point and almost twice as much because of that whole shipping aspect, I suppose that kind of changes the scenario a little bit.
Well, you were talking about the buy box. So things were ending up in a default buy box. And yeah, I think they're allowed to do that. I mean, that it is our responsibility as consumers to, you know, click and see what the best price is. I mean, I think a lot of this is just, you remember how back in the day that, you know, it said frequently bought together used to be like buy these together and then you'll save money on them. And it was like four, I don't remember when they changed it, but at some point it was like you buy these together, you save $3 or $4. And along the way, they just said, changed that to frequently bought together. And it's exactly the same price. Like they're trying to trick us, but it's not illegal the way they're tricking us. You know, it's,
they're just marketing their
product. Just changed. Yeah. They're just trying to pay the rent.
Yeah. Oh, poor Amazon. Man, I hope they can pay the rent next month.
I hope they can too. Mac OS Sierra is out today. Don't call it iOS 10 Sierra because that's not its name. It took me about 45 minutes to install today. I haven't had a lot of time to try it out. Siri now sits on my desktop. I can talk to her. Do you want to ask her a question? Hey, Siri, what's the weather outside?
Here's the forecast for today.
Oh, my goodness. You can finally find the weather on your computer. That is a miracle.
Siri's perfect.
Yeah, Siri's pretty awesome. Siri's my new best friend.
You actually had some... I'm going to see what you tried to do with Siri, because on your Mac... Well, I can on that.
Well, I don't have my Mac here.
But you do have a Mac. Yeah. You can also use Apple Pay on websites. There's a more efficient iCloud. I could open my laptop with my Apple Watch. You could open
your
laptop.
That's cool. I like the two-factor authentication. That's nice. With your Apple Watch.
Yes.
That's a good feature.
To get Sierra, you need a MacBook late 2009 or later, an iMac late 2009 or later, a MacBook Air 2010 or later, a MacBook Pro 2010 or later, a MacBook Mini 2010 or later, or a MacBook Pro 2010 or later.
I just don't know how often I'm going to use Siri on the desktop, to be honest.
Well, what if you say, hey, Siri, and I say, hey, Siri, then, you know, we sit right next to each other. You might ask your questions. Your you might Siri. Turn the... off my computer.
Our Siris are going to do the same thing. This is what's going to happen. And then we'll get to see which Siri is faster.
It's true.
I don't know. Like on Chrome OS, I can't remember when it was, like probably like a year ago-ish, right around there. They kind of brought Google Now voice actions into Chrome OS. And I mean, just anytime you bring, for whatever reason, in my brain anyways, voice interaction with my computer just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It does with my mobile device, and I'm not sure why there's a difference there. But I'm way, and maybe it's just because I've just done it more with the mobile device or with my smartwatch or whatever, that I'm just more used to issuing voice commands there versus just like keyboard shortcut type a few things and I get there, you know. But I guess it's probably just habit.
Did you figure out what the keyboard shortcut was to get to Siri?
It was option spacebar, but you have to hold it down. Yeah. Maybe not for you.
Maybe because Siri's already open.
Oh, that probably is.
Options.
Yeah.
That does not sound
that's
good.
Not working for you. Okay. But it's like, so like a command spacebar pulls up spotlight search.
Command spacebar.
But that's spotlight.
There we go. It's command spacebar, not option spacebar. Thank you, Scooter.
Mine's different. Mine's different.
Okay. Megan, here's what I found.
She found me something at Best Buy.
Good work, Siri.
Yeah, thank you, Siri. I think for accessibility, someone might be helpful. Mm-hmm. If you are cooking and your hands are covered in flour and mayonnaise, then...
And your laptop is open.
Siri, for when your hands are covered in mayonnaise.
Yes, perfect tagline. It's been almost two decades since Napster came along and redefined the music industry. And through all that time, the record industry has been relatively ineffective at recapturing its money-making glory. Or so it thinks. Last year was the first time in that period that sales in the industry actually grew. And now a mid-year report from the Recording Industry Association of America shows that the trend might actually continue for the second straight year. Something that hasn't happened since the peak of CD sales in 1998 and 1999. For the first half of 2016, recorded music retail sales grew 8.1% to $3.4 billion. And they can thank streaming for that, basically, with $1.6 billion in revenue, up 57% and accounting for nearly half of all industry sales so far. All three majors have reported gains this year. That's Universal Music Group, Sony Music Entertainment, and Warner Music Group. The report does say that ad-supported streaming services aren't doing enough to convince users to buy music because they, you know, that they make a lot of money when consumers actually buy, as opposed to these ad-supported free, you know, trickle, you know, basically they're getting pennies, they say, with these types of services, and there isn't enough kind of transition into actual paying methods.
Don't you wonder how much of this is people who forget to cancel their free like Apple Music subscription or their free Tidal subscription?
I'm sure there's a percentage of this that is from that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean I do think like I spend $14 a month on Apple Music, and that is way more than the music I've bought in past years.
Well, yeah, I think that's a really important distinction to make is that, you know, even when I was heavy into buying music for my my music library, as opposed to doing the streaming or whatever. I mean, it was very different scenario, but I don't know if I was paying what I'm paying right now in streaming on a yearly basis. I'm sure there were a couple when I was, you know, when I was a teenager and, you know, kind of in my early 20s where I was buying a lot of music that, I mean, I spent a lot of money on music, so I'm sure I did then, but that would never have followed me throughout the course of the rest of my life. So I don't know. Cost of a 1-year subscription is definitely more than the average consumer spends on CDs, and that's a very important point. Coming up, the U.S. government has a new rule book on autonomous vehicles. But before we talk about that, let's take a minute to thank Epson. They're the sponsor of this episode. Epson's revolutionary cartridge-free EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The EcoTank ET4550, it's a wireless all-in-one printer. It doesn't use ink cartridges. It has this awesome, innovative, refillable ink tank that you just fill up. It earned it the title of CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. So, you know, no more getting frustrated because you're always out of ink. It includes up to 2 years of ink, equal to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. You can save up to 80% on ink with low-cost replacement bottles. It's powered by Precision Core printing technology. It has auto two-sided printing, 30-page auto document feeder, easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones, and all EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. That's what it's all about. With Epson's EcoTank line of printers, you'll have the freedom to print without running out of ink. The Epson EcoTank system was named the 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year, and you should try it for yourself. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today. That'll transform the way your home, office, your work group prints. And for the best combination of ease and value, you'll want to turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for their support. The U.S. federal government today released the Federal Automated Vehicles Policy Rulebook to lay down rules for the rapidly developing autonomous car market. And joining us to discuss these guidelines is Sam Abuelsamid from Navigant Research. How's it going, Sam?
Great as always, Jason and Megan. Always fun to join you guys.
Yeah, it's good to get you back. So first of all, explain a little bit about the 15-point safety assessment at the foundation of this rulebook.
Yeah, so what they released today, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA, is some basic guidelines, some initial rules as a starting point for development and deployment of autonomous vehicles. Because right now, under the current motor vehicle safety standards, there's nothing specific that says you can or cannot do autonomous vehicles. And because this technology is developing so quickly, for the first time ever, the regulators and car makers and suppliers are getting together, and they're trying to set down some basic guidelines before these cars get out into consumer use. Mm-hmm. So the basic standards, the 15-point safety guidelines that they laid out today, cover things like collecting data, collecting telemetry data. So, you know, what they want to do is make sure that all of these vehicles collect the kind of data that, you know, you might, for example, get, you know, from an airplane black box if there's a crash. You know, so looking for vehicle data about how the vehicle's behaving, how people are using the vehicles. And they want to be able to gather up some of this data. Regulators want to be able to access this data going forward as the vehicles are being developed and as they get into initial use to help, you know, refine the rules as they go along. So they're taking a really proactive approach for a change. And I think it's actually a good thing. What they haven't done at this point is they haven't said, you know, that anybody must use any kind of specific technology. So it's being, you know, totally technology agnostic. So if you want to build a system that, like Tesla, that doesn't use any LiDAR sensors, or you want to use LiDAR sensors, or you want to use communications, manufacturers are still free to do it any way they want and innovate. but they're trying to get some basic guidelines down. And there's also things like making sure that the processes that they use, cover things like cybersecurity and validation of the software to make sure that everything is safe.
Yeah. So how involved exactly does the federal government hope to be with these cars? I mean, are they really getting into, you say that they're not outlining necessarily technology that needs to be implemented specifically, but they want to get involved in like the software updates that are pushed out to the vehicles after the fact. They want to get involved into approving the vehicles before they hit the hands of consumers. Is that right?
Yeah, but, you know, that's actually no different than the situation today. I mean, before a manufacturer can sell a new vehicle to customers, they have to go through a certification process. You know, they have to do all the testing to verify that the vehicle meets all the crash safety requirements, that it meets all the other motor vehicle safety standards for things like brakes and lighting. And then, you know, the way it's done today is the manufacturers do all that testing, and then they submit the paperwork to the government for certification, and then the government, they will do audits, and they will take a subset of all the new vehicles that come to market and make sure that they'll run their own tests just to verify that everything was done correctly. But they don't do it with every new car that comes to market, and it sounds like they're continuing the same kind of process. It's just that now, because you have these systems that are going to replace the driver, we're adding in that you have to submit some documentation on how your autonomous system works to verify that it's in fact going to be safe enough for use by regular people on the road.
Right. So these are the rules that have been put forth by the government. Do you see anybody pushing back, and what are the particular ways you think that Tesla and Google and others will be pushing back on these rules?
Well, I think in general, the companies that are based in Silicon Valley are probably going to say, no, we don't want any rules, because that's generally the way they're used to work.
That's the way we do it here.
Exactly. but, you know, I think from the discussions I've had with people at a number of different companies, most seem to agree that we need at least some baseline regulations as far as some performance standards for what systems should be able to detect and what sorts of scenarios they should be able to work in. Nobody wants any really heavy-handed rules, and they don't want any rules that say specifically you have to use this particular set of sensors, you know, but just some common sense guidelines. And I think most of the car makers and the big suppliers are probably going to end up being in favor of that. They recognize the benefits of that because, you know, one of the things to consider is if we start putting this technology out on the road, you know, it's not like smartphone apps. You know, if you put an app out there or make a social network that crashes and doesn't work, you know, it's not going to kill anybody. Mm-hmm. But if you put a car out there, an autonomous car out there that crashes, you know, into people or other vehicles, that's a real problem. And so if that starts happening on a regular basis, then consumers aren't going to accept the technology. And there's so many potential benefits from this technology that you don't want to destroy it before it has a chance to take hold, or destroy consumer confidence before the technology has a chance to take hold. So I think most people in the industry recognize that we do need at least some baseline standards. And I think, you know, everybody else will fall in line, you know, with the possible exception of people like George Hotz, who, you know, is going off and doing his own thing. But
he kind of revels in that fact. Revels in the fact that he's doing things very different. That's kind of, he's always done things a little differently. Very recently, I think over the weekend, researchers in China were able to run tests that enabled them to gain access of Teslas. To do things like remotely open the sunroof, unlock the doors while the car is stationary, but then also while it's in motion, you know, turn on the wipers, fold the back mirror, open the rear hatch, and even apply brakes all from 12 miles away. So obviously hacking is a consideration. It's definitely a serious issue going forward when you're talking about these highly connected vehicles. What kind of provisions are here to address concerns like these specifically?
Again, there's not anything specific saying that manufacturers have to do specific things. You know, what the guidelines say is that you have to factor in cybersecurity. You have to try and make the systems as secure as reasonably possible. And you have to document all your processes and all your validation processes. So, you know, for a situation like what was demonstrated with the Tesla in China, you know, it's not, that scenario isn't a whole lot different from what we saw last year with the Jeep hack that was in Wired, or earlier last year with a hack with a GM vehicle with OnStar. Mm-hmm. Except in this case, they weren't going through the telematics, the cellular data connection. They were going through the car's Wi-Fi connection. And what they did, you know, this time, you know, Tesla has a bug bounty program like several other car makers do now, including GM and Fiat Chrysler. So they actually used the responsible disclosure program. They, when they discovered the vulnerability, they went to Tesla and gave them an opportunity to fix it. And a software patch was already pushed out to the cars before they went public with this information.
Got it.
So they're just demonstrating that, yeah, you know, there's still more work to be done. And, you know, everybody recognizes this. You know, I was just on a panel the other day with the director of the Automotive ISAC, their Information Sharing and Analysis Center, as well as a couple of other executives, talking about cybersecurity. And everybody understands that you can never make a complex system, a complex computer system, completely safe or completely, you know, bug free. But you do everything you reasonably can, and then you have systems in place to be able to respond quickly when problems are found. And that's part of what the over-the-air update measures in these guidelines are all about as well, is to make sure that they have systems in place to handle over-the-air updates for these vehicles and to be able to validate that the fixes that they're doing are actually going to fix the problems. Mm-hmm.
So we all know that cars didn't come with seatbelts. They, you know, we weren't required to wear seatbelts for a long time. Those three-point harnesses that hook in car seats now, those didn't even exist when my teenagers were babies. So this is, do you think this will be a similar, like just a long evolution of safety features being added?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we're going to see, you know, the first autonomous vehicles that, you know, carry regular passengers around on a regular basis are probably going to start arriving in small numbers around 2020, 2021, you know, particularly in ride-hailing fleets. I mean, that's some of the announcements we've seen in the last few weeks from Volvo and Uber and GM and from Ford and from other manufacturers. And between now and then, you know, as these cars are developed, we're going to see we'll see a set of basic regulations put in place. And over time, as we learn how these vehicles behave in the real world, those regulations will evolve just the way all the other ones do. You know, the crash safety standards, you know, have changed every few years as vehicles become safer. They keep, regulators keep raising the bar to try and make them even more safe, you know, improving lighting systems and emission controls and all these other things. So it'll be an ongoing process that never ends.
Yeah. Never, ever ends.
Who's going to be the Ralph Nader of autonomous cars? That's what I'm wondering.
Hey, Ralph is still around. I mean,
true. Ralph Nader could be the Ralph Nader of autonomous cars.
He was just inducted into the Automotive Hall of Fame a couple of months ago here in Detroit. And, you know, that came as a shock to a lot of people. But, you know, while a lot of people in the industry really resented Ralph Nader for a long, long time, especially at GM, because he was, you know, he was their first target with the Corvair in the 1960s. Today, you know, a lot of the people in the industry recognize that because of the work that he and others did, you know, to try and make vehicles safer, you know, the products that they're building today are better. You know, we drive a lot further than we do. You know, than we did in the 1960s, we have a lot more cars on the road, and yet a lot fewer people are dying. I mean, just in the United States last year, you know, we drove 3.1 trillion miles. And, you know, out of that, you know, yeah, there were 35,000 fatalities, but, you know, that's a little over one fatality for every 100 million miles of driving.
Wow.
So, you know, that's about a quarter of what it was in 1970.
Wow, it's a really great way to kind of understand it, to, you know, kind of visualize it, I suppose. Sam Abolsamid from Fortune. Well, you write for Fortune, but also Forbes and Navigant Research. Tell people where they can follow you online.
You can find me at navigantresearch.com. You can find me on Twitter. Just Google my name and you'll find me in all kinds of places.
Yes, you will. Right on. Thank you so much for coming on, Sam. Appreciate it.
Pleasure as always.
All right.
Take care.
Have a good night.
All right.
We got an email from Jacob. He is an Apple campus rep, and he wrote to us at TNT at twit.tv about our discussion last week about the apparent toxic culture at Apple. Jacob writes, I just want to weigh in on your discussion on diversity within Apple. I am an Apple employee, and in my experience, Apple is incredibly fair, open, and really is trying its best to be diverse. Yes, there's still a long way to go, but I've never been associated with any company that is trying harder than Apple is. Thank you, Jacob, for writing in.
Absolutely.
After the break, let's open up Leo's new ceramic Apple
We get to?
Watch.
We get to
it.
Do that?
We got the bugs.
That's awesome.
Yes. And we will not see if we can scratch or break it. I'm not going to do that because I like my job. And if something does go terribly wrong in the next segment and I do get fired, I will go first right to ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. Would you hire me? Do you know how to find me? If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And with ZipRecruiter, now you can. Posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Just post once and watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages that look great on any screen. You can add their unique mobile apply process for more visitors and applicants. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can add multiple users to your account. So quickly screen candidates with real-world questions using free form, multiple choice, or yes-no formats. View candidate responses in conjunction with their beautifully formatted resumes. Rate them and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. More than 125 million candidate applications have been delivered. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. As you know, Leo is on vacation for the next few weeks, but today his brand new Apple Watch arrived and he told me I could open it. So here it is, the Apple Watch Edition Series 2 in ceramic. It's made with a high-strength zirconia powder that's mixed with alumina.
I don't know how he would say that. He says aluminium,
but this is alumina, I don't even know if that's a real thing. it's also polished with diamond slurry.
Oh.
So let's open it up.
All right, let's do it. So it's in that. Let's see
Okie dokie.
We're looking for the spot of the tape.
okay, Jason, Jason's going to open it up.
We did not plan for this.
Okay, I'll talk about it while Jason opens it up. And then if something goes wrong, Jason gets blamed, so you can hire him.
Do I have a hammer? Where's the hammer?
No hammer. Okay, so there's...
Okay, so
there's the beautiful white box.
This is really hard to do.
If you're listening, I'll just do the step by step.
Yeah, you do that. I'm still
it's the plastic. You don't need a knife to open it. Ooh, listen to that plastic open.
Ooh, this is really satisfying.
He's taking off the top.
It's like a little air releases. It's almost like opening up a coffee container for the first time.
This is no Android watch, Jason.
Man, I've never opened an Apple product like this before. Am I doing it wrong?
You're doing it perfectly right.
Okay.
I've also
got my arms outstretched to the edge of the table. It is really impressive where this camera is pointed.
Here's the box. It comes in a nice box. Okay, so here's the, don't be let down, but it does, this $1,200 watch comes with a rubbery band that looks kind of white and dirty, but it's not. I don't know. You like that band? People have been complaining about the band. Okay, Apple wants you to buy more expensive bands with this.
Let's see. Okay, this is where my outstretched arms might actually get in the way here. Okay, there we go.
So what do you think?
This feels good.
How does it feel?
Feels nice.
The ceramic, does it feel?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it kind of still feels kind of like plastic. Nah, it's a little harder than plastic. I guess it's hard to tell. Like, if I didn't know that this was... Oh, I see. I've got another shot. If I didn't know that this was ceramic, I wouldn't necessarily guess that it was necessarily.
Yeah, would you guess it was like plastic or...
I would probably guess that it was plastic, to be honest. But I wouldn't know what I was talking about, obviously, because it's ceramic. So it's nice looking.
I think it's nice looking. I definitely think it's nice looking. I would have wanted a nicer band for $1,200. But I guess they assume that you already have a nice band.
Oh, my goodness. I'm putting on an Apple Watch for the first time. I didn't know this was ever going to happen to me.
I'm an enabler here. there was a camera over here. I just wanted to bring you all along, wasn't it?
Okay,
looks really nice on your wrist, Jason.
You have no idea how difficult this is.
does it come charged? Press the side there.
Here, I'll go ahead and. I already went to the gym once today. This is like extreme calisthenics. No, I don't think that it does.
Is it the bottom button?
Oh yes, it does.
Well, you probably have to pair it to your phone.
Yeah, which isn't going to work for me. I don't have a phone to pair
it with. I'll just pair it to my phone. And then once it's paired, then it's essentially mine.
It does feel nice, though.
I think it looks nice. I think it would look better with a black band, personally. I think the black or space gray Milanese loop, which would cost you another, I don't know, $1,000, I think, maybe $600.
That's okay. That's okay. So, So this is Leo's. We aren't allowed to take to test his durability with a hammer.
No, we can't. I joked about that earlier on Twitter, but I have no intention. Although it's supposed to be very durable. And it's interesting that they let you order. Originally, you had to go into a store when the first Apple Watch came out. You had to go into a store to get it because I think they really wanted people to see it. I'm not sure that if someone walked in the store and saw that rubber band, they wouldn't get that watch, or they would buy another band.
Yeah.
Or like I said before, you might have bought a watch last year and you already have a nice band.
I don't hate this band. It's actually really nice. I mean, it feels really nice.
I mean,
I don't think it cheapens the look of the watch. I think it looks fine. I don't know. It looks all right to me, but I'm a man of simple taste.
Like $1,200. You think that?
I mean, that seems like a ridiculous price for me to spend on any sort of smartwatch, to be honest. But I mean, there's obviously a market for it. All right, Megan, you ready to hold this?
I'm ready to hold it. Oh, and when I say hold it,
arms,
I mean put it on.
They're weak
wrist.
Now from stretching all the way to the edge of the table.
I think it would look good with a black band. See, I have the smaller one. He has the bigger one. And I think I'm going to upgrade to the bigger one.
Are you going to get the ceramic?
Are you going to pay for it?
No.
Then no. And every time someone asks you that question, I'm going to.
That's a good question to follow up with, because you never get anything if you don't ask.
It's true.
One of these times you might answer that way and someone will be like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And then you got it.
Mm-hmm. So you can swim with this. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come in six packs, Grumpy, in the chat room.
$1,249 is the cost on that. Watch OS 3, GPS, really nice upgraded GPU, second-gen dual-core S2 processor, which they say is 50% faster, displays 2 times brighter. That's 1,000 nits of brightness as opposed to 450 with the previous watch. So if you were out in sunlight, you'd see a big difference between the two watches they have there. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I got to unbox an Apple Watch. I never thought that would happen.
And now you don't even want to do all about Android tonight, do you?
I've got plans after the show. I might have to. No. No, it's a nice watch.
Yeah, I think that I'm probably going to put it back in the box and keep it in a safe somewhere.
Right. Well, I didn't do a very good job of keeping the pieces organized. So,
but it is true that, I do get that they would put the sport band in there because, it is still a fitness watch. You can wear it. I mean, it's durable, so you could wear it for a run. You could go swimming in it. It would spit out the water. It would expel the water, yes. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
All right.
An official unboxing of Leo's Apple Watch. And
sorry, Leo. It's too bad he didn't get it before his trip.
I know. Really, he was bummed. Like, but he did give us permission to open it.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Leo. TNT's fan of the day is KatNYC on Twitter, who says, while on my walks to the park, taking a break, view of lower Manhattan, listening, as you can see down there, to Tech News Today on her phone while looking at a gorgeous view of Manhattan. Love it. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we're going to find it. Up next, we'll talk about how fitness trackers, maybe even like the Apple Watch, might have the best intentions, but are they actually effectively promoting weight loss with the people that wear them? We're going to talk about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. If you've ever been through the mortgage process, you know, I know I've been through the mortgage process. It's not a whole lot of fun. You're working towards that thing that you've always wanted a home, let's say, but you have to jump through a lot of hurdles to get there. And that is the part that kind of drags the whole process down. It's not easy. Rocket Mortgage actually brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts, confusing parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. So if you don't like searching through those stacks of old files and paperwork to find just what you need in order to get that mortgage, well, Rocket Mortgage can help you. You can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. And even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
Before we get to our last story, I want to point out that you forgot to show the rest of the stuff in the box.
Watch. The watch is the thing.
Okay, so there's two chargers. There's this little thing that you lay your watch on because you don't want, as Rene Ritchie says, you don't want to just lay your watch on your bedside table like an animal. It has this nice, it's very soft.
It's a watch pillow.
And you get another charger, which is awesome. Because you want to have a charger at work. I mean, I don't know. Actually, you don't want it to uncharge. Or maybe you want to keep a charger in your car or, you know, somewhere else.
Do all versions of the watch get the two chargers? Or is it just
the ceramic
version?
I don't know if the Series 2 comes with two. Mine did not come with two. I had to buy an extra charger.
It's a nice little charging pad.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's always something more in the box.
Uh-huh, apparently. I just couldn't see it because it was all the way at the edge of the table.
Yes. You know, speaking of the Apple Watch and speaking of fitness chargers, fitness wearables, a 2-year-long study by the Journal of the American Medical Association says a fitness tracker on your wrist might be sabotaging your diet. A randomized trial with 500 overweight volunteers showed that participants with fitness wearables lost an average of 7.1 pounds, but the participants who were not given wearables lost an average of 13 pounds. That's more pounds lost if you're keeping track. John Jakasik, the lead author on the study, told NPR that volunteers who saw how many calories they'd burned in a day might have decided that that was a sign that they could eat more than they normally would. The device wasn't an Apple Watch or a Fitbit or anything else fancy. It was a device worn on the upper arm, and it measured the heat generated by exercise. So this was a 2-year-long study, so they didn't have anything fancy back 2 years ago, I guess. And so it was compared to the standard behavioral weight loss intervention. It's not doing any good. I think that makes sense that people, I mean, I'm like, oh, look at how many calories I burned. Like, I'm going to eat, you know, a grilled cheese sandwich.
I feel like when it comes to quantified self stuff, like we're in this big push of we have access to all this data. So let's get it all and let's see what we can do with it, because having that data is better than not having it. But I feel like it almost shoots itself in the foot. Like, all that data doesn't mean anything if you don't know what to do with it, if you don't know how to read it or what it means, the inferences that it points to, all that kind of stuff. So sure, we have access to these things that log, you know, all sorts of information about how our body is working and the calories that we're consuming and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, along with that comes the need for some sort of education around what you do with that information. Otherwise, like, what's the point? It almost gets more confusing, more noisy than anything else.
Especially when you're talking about calories, because, I mean, there's no easy way to track those. I mean, you have to write them down. You have to look them up. You have to, figure it out. Nothing's just, you know, you can't. I mean, in the future, perhaps artificial intelligence will hopefully let us take a picture of our food and then it will know how many calories. I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility. But right now it's like, oh, what do these calories mean? The calories on my Apple Watch are different than the calories that, you know, on my other fitness tracker. And so, you know, it's, I don't know. But I mean, this study was done between 18 and 35 year olds. What I've heard with the Apple Watch is a lot of success comes with people older than that who are not really moving around at all. And so, you know, just a reminder to move around, or now WatchOS 3 has a reminder to breathe, which can be helpful. You don't want to forget to breathe.
Don't. No, that would
bad be bad news if you're not being reminded to breathe. But seriously, though, I mean, just for me, I've been using it because it's like, oh, okay, just stop for a second. Stop running around and doing everything. Like, just take a deep breath and just be in the moment for a minute. It's helpful for those reminders.
Yeah, and I mean, being in the moment, that's kind of another thing that I was thinking of along these lines, is that we have, you know, this watch that, that let's say, catalogs all this information, and we have to kind of manage that information after the fact with calories, enter, you know, enter in all our food and all this stuff. Maybe it's just the sheer fact that when you're doing that, you're not focused. You're not actually focused on the task, which is, you know, you think you are. You're focused on like the data aspects of the task, and maybe that drives your behavior in other ways. But maybe the people without, like, their one and only focus is do the hard work that is required to lose the weight, not, you know, get caught up in this like data management aspect of things, and the focus shifts.
So I mean, both groups did show improvements in body composition, fitness, physical activity, and diet. So, you know, there's not a negative in that way, but what you're saying could definitely be a negative. And we definitely heard stories about people, you know, people with eating disorders who might not be the right people for fitness trackers. It's just, you get too obsessive about it and you're tracking it too much. And that's not healthy either. I mean, this has been the longest study, but there have been a lot of studies. I mean, well, Fitbit will say, like, we've done studies and, you know, it's definitely an improvement to the health, but this has been this is the longest study. And yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. We don't know, ladies and gentlemen. We know what we said.
You
know, and now we know it's the end of the show.
What I was going to say was, I love it so much, I can't give it up, and I don't want to believe that it's hurting me.
Yeah,
it's only helping me.
All right, that makes
sense.
And
I know that I might have a problem that I'm just not ready to admit yet. So I'll keep it. I'll keep Leo's ceramic watch. $1,200 couldn't, you know, it has to make me lose weight, right?
For sure. That's how it works. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tell me I have a fitness tracker problem, please tweet that at me, at Megan Maroney.
I'm not wearing one, so you can't tell me that. But you can tell me anyways, and I would laugh at it. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole. Thanks to Alex for sitting there like this and scrolling the words. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good after the fact. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.